You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
There are 34 million.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06 now on this Monday morning, August 4th. 2025. Nice to have you along here. Parker Olson has the day off, but Greg Bach is joining us here, and so is Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and so is Up North News reporter Selena Heller, and so is meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It was, you know, a weekend where the smoke, again, depends on where you are in the state, but it had dissipated just enough yesterday that you could do some of the things you want to do outdoors. It wasn't like as bad as Thursday, Friday was, but it is still, it's definitely still something that's lingering around here. It's going to be, I mean, kind of one of the weather stories of the summer, I suppose, here.
Yeah, it sure is.
Here, Robin Tigerton puts it this way. Mike, the farmer who leases my family farm, has told me that crops are doing well, busy baling hay, but the smoke blocking the sunshine has made it rough with the morning dew. We noticed that as well. You can't get out and mow the lawn as early as you normally would because, again, that sun is just not burning through as much as you'd like it to.
No, it's not. We've got patchy fog, too, all over the place. Mm-hmm. Definitely down towards Bosque Belle, Camp Douglas this morning. A lot of southwestern areas and northeastern spots of the state. We've got this high-pressure system, right? It moved in from Canada. It's been sitting over us all weekend. And it is still going to stay here today. It's kind of slid over to Michigan a little bit, but another one builds in behind it. And long story short, it's going to be a dry day and another smoke-filled day. So, of course, we have that air quality alert that expires at noon, but it could get extended one more day. I think by tomorrow, we should for sure be in the clear from this wildfire smoke. The winds start to pick up out of the south, about 15 miles per hour. That should be enough to kick it on out of here. And then, of course, as we go to later in the week, that whole jet stream shifts and active weather moves back in. We've got the pattern just kind of shifting out of the south and bringing in more storms, more heat, and more humidity, too. So right now, it is still crisp. It is still comfortable. Temperatures are at about 48 degrees in Tomahawk, 72 degrees into Waukesha. And highs today will climb to the upper 70s to low 80s all across the state. It is still going to be comfortable dew points. But by Wednesday, it starts to turn muggy. And by Thursday, we're getting hot and humid. Now, rain holds off until tomorrow. We could see a few isolated showers, possibly far north. And that's about it. As we go into later in the week, we'll see more storms.
Okay. From Tigerton, from Rob, good morning. Fair and hazy, 55 degrees. Today I have mowing jobs in Wittenberg. Whenever I hear Greg's voice, I can hear him saying, drink my water.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you could hear him saying it right now.
Drink your water, Rob.
There we go.
Drink your water.
Says I mowed Saturday and rural Tigerton got stung by a bee and swelled up around his elbow. Had to ice it down. Let's see. He's got another note or two here from us. Oh, he had a cat at my house who had kittens in the garage where I keep my truck and lawnmowers. I now have an army of cats outside that stay in the barn. We talked about Mike, who leases his family farm. Mike told me to say hi to Kristen. He supports Kristen and her fight. So there you go.
Thanks, Rob. Hi, Mike.
I know. You just got... Oh, and Rob also noted, I love Brittany's videos on social media from the EAA Air Venture. I was going to mention that too, Brittany. Did you do more than one? I saw one on social media over the weekend.
Yeah, I've been slowly putting them all together. So they're more and more coming out. But yeah, got a couple of them.
Okay. Well, great. So again, look for Brittany there on social media if you want to see what all she was talking about with the camping and the rain and the exhibitions.
The camping and the rain and the planes. Good Lord.
So much. Brittany, thanks. We'll talk to you next hour.
Sounds good.
Hey, a reminder that if you miss an episode of our show at any point, there's a great way to make sure that you can go back and listen, and that would be to pod this program. Head over to Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow the show that way. You can also do it over at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. All right, so Selena, the Combine Demolition Derby. I know we've talked about this at least once before, maybe a couple of times, because I don't know that they necessarily invented it at the Jackson County Fair, but they sure have perfected it. Oh,
you're on mute, Selena.
Okay.
Yes, no, it's been around. And, you know, we got to thinking about it, and they've been doing it for quite a while, a lot of years. But it's in other county fairs. It's in a few other states, as I was kind of looking at it a couple of years ago, where they've done combine demolition derbies. But like a couple of years ago, they had 17 combines at the Jackson County Fair. So that was a pretty big deal. That's a lot of combines.
Yes, it is. And you talked to a couple of folks who tell us kind of more of the basics about it all.
Yeah. So Mark Emerson, he's 66. He's and all these farmers kind of, and Sam McNulty, they're buddies, and they kind of get together and do this every year. There's a lot of farmers and their kids now are in it, and nephews and things like that. So they're kind of all ag related. If they're not farmers, they have businesses that are ag related or something like that. So it's just a fun time for them. And it's at the Jackson County Fair, and there's a demolition derby, a regular derby with cars and trucks. And gosh, back in the day, my brothers did it, so I got to paint the cars. And then there's a powder puff, so with girls driving too. So my brothers always thought I should drive, but I never did.
Nice to know you have boundaries someplace. You're not going to drive the demolition derby.
Well, and it was the year, and my friends wanted me to. I was on the Miss Jackson County court, and they're like, "You have to drive in the demolition derby. You have to do it." I'm like, oh boy. I don't know.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Did not know you were on the court.
I was back in the day. Yes.
Okay. All right. What about you, Kristen? Were you in the running for Ms. Kakana or anything like that at some point?
I'm just trying to clear this picture of Selena driving a combine, or maybe Whiskers driving in a very Toonsis kind of way. Like
Toonsis, the combine driving cat. It always ends poorly.
Well, let's
helmet on.
While we play with those visuals, let's hear from Mark Emerson, who tells us more about the Combine Demolition Derby at the Jackson County Fair.
Well, we get a bunch of guys together. We take combines. We beef them up some. We got to take the windows out, the glass all out and stuff. And we got to just beef the heads up so the heads stay on. And we go out there and smash into everybody just to see how much damage we can do. The last one standing is the winner usually. But we'll have heats today, so they'll take the top two out of five or six or whatever we have in each class, and then run in the final. Then there'll be six in the final, and the last one standing is the winner.
This is a big spectacle.
Yeah, yeah. And we make a lot of noise, a lot of crunching and stuff, banging and stuff. The one that Sam Kling, he's been tipped over twice now. He got tipped over in Marshfield, and he got tipped over in Galesville 2 weeks ago. But he didn't get hurt or anything, so that's a good thing. And he's back here now again, so he's going again with the same one. So, yeah, we've been taking some of these same ones for many years. I think I started 20 years ago with this, and then it sat for like five. We didn't have any demolition. And we started Blackover, and, you know, so we've been here for at least 15, 16 or more.
And these are pricey machines, but these aren't ones that are functioning to
No, they're wore. Work. They're wore out before we buy them. And like I said, a lot of them like his, he'll fix them up and, you know, and then take the engine out after they're done and sell the engine and get their money back out of it and stuff. So you actually don't really have much in at all invested in them. So we have a little fun, and we all get together. You know, we all get along really good.
Until we're out on the track.
Yeah, when we're on the track, we're competition. But when we're done or before, we'll help each other out. When we're done, we'll help each other out. But yeah, when we're out there, we're all out for ourselves.
I'm assuming that was Sam that we heard in the background there. Yep. Is that Sam McNulty?
Yes, I talk to them every year. They're the best. I love them. I love talking with them. And Bill McNulty was actually the winner this year, Sam's brother. No. So, and Bill is 66 also. So it's fun.
So Sam gets, they get tipped over, but they don't get injured. You're getting tipped over in a combine.
Combine. All right.
This isn't like mythical cow tipping. This is actual combine tipping, and they're not getting hurt.
Yeah, they have to beef up the cages around them. They have to wear a seatbelt. Safety is the priority. They move the gas tanks inside. So, you know,
oh, man.
They're also made of different stuff than us, Pat. They're just made differently.
Yeah, they are. Let's give a listen to Sam McNulty talk about it.
It's just a rush. We're all farmers. It's one way to let off a lot of steam. like Mark said, we're the best of friends. But when it's out there, it's one. It's only for one.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all wore out combines that we find laying at auctions or sitting in somebody's boneyard, and it's just fun. And I think, I mean, I shouldn't say this, but the crowd loves the combines a lot better than the cars.
Ooh, shots fired right there at the cars.
Yay.
I think the Demolition Derby still does well. Now, is it still the case? I know a year or two ago you told me that the ticket sales for the Combine Demolition Derby do so well, it practically subsidizes the rest of the Jackson County Fair.
It is typically the biggest day of the fair, so in terms of admission. I sell tickets to the grandstand events. That's my job at the fair. It has been since like high school. So I'm at the Demolition Derby. I have been at that event probably every year since high school. And that's my job. So the line is long. And yes, the fair does well on that day because it's such a popular event. People love, love, love it after all of these years. It hasn't, you know, waned in entertainment value or interest. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Do they have anything remotely like that by either one of you guys, Greg or Kristen? I mean, there's, I mean, it is a breed unto itself, basically.
I mean, I think that if I look, I mean, I'm sure we're seeing, because we're seeing County Fair, I think is coming up soon, and Kenosha County Fair. I'm sure there's something, but a combine races, a combine demolition derby, I don't think so.
No, this is, and we mentioned Milo Music earlier, Selena, and you said you've been to Milo Music. Did you were there for a work thing?
Yeah, can you imagine? I got to go there and stay there and watch music for work when I worked in economic development for the city. A team of us from Altoona, they were developing their new park here. And so they wanted ideas. I went there for ideas, and Visit Eau Claire, our kind of tourist organization, went there for ideas. So we got to go there and stay for work to learn, as an example, what Appleton did with Milo Music. So it was really cool.
Which, by the way, paid off because, I mean, Eau Claire is, I mean, its music festivals are just blossoming around the whole area.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We're kind of known for you know, our music events over here. And now all of the parks here have, and probably everywhere now in Wisconsin is really picking up on this, a music in the park night. And here, around here, you can go to a Sunday in Chippewa, a Monday in Altoona, and a Tuesday in Eau Claire, and then a Wednesday. And I mean, every night you can go to something around here. It's pretty cool.
There's something really cool about how the music is tied to the university there as well. So in Appleton, it's obviously Lawrence, and Eau Claire, TWEC, and the great music program there. Stevens Point has something similar. So just to see the music faculty and the students have a place where they can go and just like do their thing is so neat. Do their thing in the community.
I'm glad you mentioned the universities because over the weekend, Sherry and I went to, finally had our belated anniversary dinner. We always go to Mona Lisa on Water Street in Eau Claire. And then we go tool around the campus where we met back in 1983. And Selena, I had not seen the progress on the new science building up there. That thing is massive.
Is it? I've been seeing pictures. Mm-hmm.
It's at the bottom of the University Hill there. They tore apart, took down two dormitories from way back in the day to put up this new science building. And it's just looking so nice. But they're also tearing down Zorin Arena, where they did basketball and all the other, you know, shows and things. But they were only like halfway done. So exposed to the elements is like the bleachers and an Eau Claire logo above it. It's just really interesting just to see all the changes around campus. So
Everybody's nostalgic about losing Zorn.
Oh yeah. But it's there's some nice modernization going on there. And these universities, like Kristen said, will bring you community festivals as well. This is Mornings with Pat Greitlow. Powered by
Sorry, that's my fault.
North News. It's such a Monday thing. We'll be back after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Remember, you can get our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. We've got newsletters that come out on weekdays and, of course, my Sunday morning one as well about Wisconsin politics. And let's see. Henry the intern tells us about a northern Wisconsin bear rescued from a jar mishap. You might have heard us talking about that recently with Jimmy Koska. I think James Kelly's going to mention it as well, about a young black bear who had been roaming around Bayfield, Douglas, and Sawyer counties with its head stuck in a plastic jar. It is now safe and back in the wild. We've got that story in our newsletter. A story on how Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, the Eau Claire native, has gradually but radically helped transform downtown Eau Claire. Downtown Eau Claire looks amazing in a way that I would not have necessarily thought would happen if you'd have asked me 25 years ago. And Justin Vernon and others, to be sure, have been part of an amazing rebuilding of downtown Eau Claire. So we have that story in our newsletter. And then, if you missed our interview yesterday with the mayor of Superior, Jim Payne, well, we're going to play part of it back coming up here in less than 15 minutes. But also in our newsletter is a story about it, because you can also see an article on our website about how the city has found success building out its broadband network. How was it able to do that? Joe Biden and the American Rescue Plan. And that's always been the problem, is that we talk about these shovel-ready jobs. A lot of things aren't shovel-ready, but at least if you've got the plans in the works, you can make things happen faster than drawing things up from scratch. And Superior was ready. They just were in need of funding. And when the American Rescue Plan came along, the work was able to get done. You'll hear from Mayor Payne all about that coming up in just a bit. In national news, I was looking to give you an update on what's happening in Texas, where Republicans in the legislature are engaged in perhaps the most blatant corruption of the year, at least at the state level, in redrawing the maps mid-decade in order to add 5 Republican seats to Congress. As I'm looking at the New York Times here, I mean, there's a story about California Democrats looking to redraw their House map, but not much there at all about the situation in Texas and calling out what is happening there. Instead, we get this story about the President of the United States. The headline is, "Up on the Roof, Trump Surveys the Home He's Making His Own." Katie Rogers is the reporter, and the story starts like this. President Trump was on the roof. As a confused group of reporters assembled below him on Tuesday morning, Mr. Trump strolled around on top of the White House, occasionally stopping to take questions, but only to tell his audience he was taking a little walk in service of his latest home improvement project, a large ballroom. "It's just another way to spend my money for the country," Mr. Trump shouted. He was getting a bird's eye view of where the $200 million White House ballroom he has proposed building would go. And on it goes, just making it sound like, just another day in the Trump presidency. Now, I know the late night comedians talked about this last night, but I'm going to mention it as well. If Joe Biden were wandering up on the White House roof and muttering about building a $200 million ballroom next to it, what do you think the media coverage would be like about that? Similarly, if Joe Biden or if Barack and Michelle Obama had paved over the Rose Garden, you think we'd be hearing more about it than we are right now? Because that's what's there right now in the Rose Garden, is basically a concrete slab. In both cases, the ballroom and the slab, so that the president can have more parties. There's real things to be done, like attacking the corruption in Texas. Listen to one of the Texas Democrats who'd left the state to hold off the gerrymandering proposal there. This is Texas legislator Ann Johnson, asked by a CBS reporter about Republican claims that Democrats are abandoning their jobs. Listen to her answer.
You know that Republicans in the state, Republicans out of the state, look at what you guys are doing and thinking you're running away from the fight. You're running away from your jobs by not being in Austin today.
Yeah, no. Abandoning your job is going to Cancun in the middle of a deadly freeze, right? Abandoning your job is cutting health care when people need access. Abandoning your job is cutting public education when we already have one of the worst education systems in the nation. What we are doing is the fundamental protection by our founding fathers in the Texas Constitution
when Donald Trump called Georgia Republicans and said, I just need you to find me 11,000 votes, they said, no, sir, that's a step too far. But when he called Texas Republicans and said, I need you to steal me five seats, they said, does July work for you? Well, it doesn't work for us as Texas Democrats.
And it shouldn't. Again, listen to that. He called Georgia, said, I want you to dig up, find me 11,000 votes. I don't care how corrupt it is. And the Georgia Republicans said, no, we can't do that. Texas, meanwhile, was like, sure, sure, boss, whatever it is that you want. Because what the boss wants, this party is willing to give him. And unfortunately, far too much of the national media is not holding Trump to account on this. As the New York Times article continued to go on about, you know, the White House changes that Trump wants, Katie Rogers did say, this line, a White House that is rapidly changing from the taxpayer-funded People's House to one that resembles one of the Louis XIV properties in Trump's portfolio. And I thought that was particularly telling because, yeah, this is a guy that wants to put a gaudy gilded ballroom attached to the White House to go with all of his other golden urns and baskets and coasters, and all of it has his last name. And that's all fine, but I'm going to close with this. And it's a social media post by an account labeled Big Texas, Big Tucson Dad. And he writes this. Listen, man, if you want to live in the Palace of Versailles, that's fine. But you can't act surprised when the people eventually start sharpening the guillotine. We'll hear from Superior Mayor Jim Payne coming up next. You're up north. Welcome to our weekly homeroom segment where we highlight public education in Wisconsin and the opportunities and especially the threats to it, including the lack of taxpayer transparency when it comes to things like the ongoing voucher school movement in Wisconsin. And today's topic takes me back several years to 2017, particularly when I was helping my friend, then State Representative Dana Walks, in his campaign for governor. And one of the things that he liked to talk about that he thought not enough people were talking about was that need for greater taxpayer transparency on property tax bills. That not enough was being done to let taxpayers know that when they see that line on their property tax bill that says, you know, School District of Chippewa Falls, that not all that money is going to the School District of Chippewa Falls. In fact, a lot of money is skimmed off the top and put into the voucher program, but the taxpayer wouldn't know it. Dana Walks wrote a bill that called for that chunk of money to be, you know, put separately on the property tax bill. Republicans in the legislature year after year said no, that they weren't going to require that through state law. Some folks in Green Bay said, well, maybe we need to make that happen at the local level. And they recently did. And they're here to talk about how you could do that same thing in your hometown and have, again, greater taxpayer transparency. This isn't about whether voucher schools should exist. And this time around, it's not even whether they should get state funding, though I'd argue that they shouldn't. But at the very least, you should know how much of your tax dollars go to that when it's on your property tax bill. So we welcome back to the program our friend Denise Gomer Hutchinson from Wisconsin Public Education Network. We're also happy to be joined by Laura McCoy of the Green Bay School Board and Alyssa Prophet, who's an alder on the Green Bay City Council. Nice to have all of you here. Thank you, Denise, Laura, Alyssa. Good to see you all.
It's nice to be here.
Denise, let us start with you. I know we've talked to you about this previously, but lead us up into what happened in Green Bay. In other words, before we even get to what they did, maybe you can say, you'll say better than I can. Why is it important to have this kind of transparency on property tax bills?
Well, it's critical for taxpayers to make well-informed decisions on if they support future referendums, but also just to know and understand where their tax dollars are going.
Yeah. And so, again, the state legislature wasn't making this happen. Laura, do you want to pick up the story and talk about how things started to get rolling in Green Bay?
Yes. In the fall of 2023, our school board passed a resolution asking the city council of the various municipalities that fall underneath the Green Bay School District umbrella to please include this this information on their tax bill. We started with Green Bay, which is obviously the largest municipality. We passed the resolution, our board passed it unanimously. It went before the city council the following January, and it got tabled. It didn't pass, and they didn't even take a vote. What happened is that this is where Alyssa comes in. She was elected the following April and brought this back to the city council. The upmake of their city council had changed, and she really pushed hard for this.
Alyssa, why don't you go ahead and take the baton from there to talk about how you got started in this process.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm thankful to know both Denise and Laura, who are great advocates for public education. I also value public education. I have a kindergartner and first grader starting up in about a month here at Green Bay Public School. This was a conversation that I hate to say was easy at the start, right? Because I've yet to talk to a voter who wants less transparency when it comes to where their tax dollars are going. They want more. And in this conversation, like, where do we put it? I believe there's a few pieces of mail that taxpayers will look at and take seriously, and that's likely their W-2 documents if they still receive those via mail, and it's their tax bill, it's their property tax bill. The entirety of the council sees calls go up when it's that time of year, right? So really what I did from there was bring back a communication really for just staff to investigate the feasibility. That's the first step, is really like, can we get our staff who are phenomenal at the city of Green Bay. They're willing to run with a lot of things that the council wants to look into, right? So that was the first step. We thankfully got that through committee level. Our worked legal and finance worked with the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, showed examples of where and what we were looking to do. They came back, and Wisconsin Department of Revenue was really our end all, or you know, the final say when it comes to the feasibility piece. And they said, yeah, yes, we can do that. And the imaging that was shown was then sent back to council to discuss further. Was an interesting night at council in terms of who spoke in favor and who spoke against. So I can maybe let Laura or Denise speak to that a little further. But thankfully, it did pass. Unfortunately, when a lot of things pass easy in this cycle for us, this one was not. It was a 6-6, and it was broken by the mayor. But it was a pass, so we'll take that.
Well, without a doubt. So once you looked at the feasibility, I'm wondering if part of it too was then the cost. It's one thing to say you want the transparency, but A, you have to go get the numbers, and then B, you have to change the way that you do your property tax bills to put it out there. Was cost any kind of a consideration in this as well, Alyssa?
That was certainly a question from a number of alders as well. And our finance department is the one who creates and does the work there. And then the county is the one who prints the bill. So from a city perspective, our staff said to them, this would be $0 cost. I mean, they said it's work that we're already doing. It's something that if that's what the body wants. It was kind of funny, the discussion, you know, folks were like, well, what else can we add to it? And they're like, yeah, what else do you want to add? I mean, it's printed for the city of Green Bay. Like, yeah, so cost certainly was a factor, but staff was confident in saying that it wouldn't be at any additional cost for us.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. It is sometimes politically convenient when you want costs itemized. I recall being in the legislature and hearing Republicans say, well, there should be a Google. Government should be essentially like a checkbook where you can look line by line at, you know, all the things that cost taxpayers money, which nobody really totally disagrees with, Denise, unless you're looking for obfuscation. And so it's one thing about whether, you know, it's feasible to get the numbers. It's another thing if you can afford to put the numbers on. But it seemed to me, first and foremost, the reason we weren't seeing these numbers on tax bills was that there were too many lawmakers trying to hide the cost of vouchers. And Wisconsin Public Education Network has basically made a cottage industry out of going, oh, we'll get those numbers for you.
Yes, we have. And that's been really important and valuable, because we're finding a lot of legislators and therefore also city council members have no idea what the costs are for the voucher program and also what the costs are on the taxpayers.
Right. And so that's Denise Gomer Hutchinson from Wisconsin Public Education Network. A moment ago, you heard from Alyssa Proffitt on the City of Green Bay City Council. Now back to Laura McCoy on the Green Bay School Board. And again, this whole notion of getting the numbers and providing the transparency, this does not sound like it was a heavy lift for the school district of Green Bay, nor for any other school district. The transparency is something you would naturally want the taxpayer to have, it seems to me.
Yes, and I think that the indicator of the importance, the political importance of this statewide is who showed up at our city council that night to argue against voucher transparency. I think you might be interested to know that John Gard showed up and Kate Zeiske showed up to argue against this measure.
And remind people who they are.
John Gard used to be in the state legislature, and his wife, Kate Zeiske, used to be the secretary of
Revenue, I believe, or yeah. And state treasurer. Yeah. So, I mean, they've had leadership positions that were part of a legislature that was not looking to make these costs transparent. And as you just said, they're still arguing against that to this point. Let's carry it then to the next step, and that is other communities around Wisconsin, if they want to do this. And I don't know if the order in which you did it was the way that everybody should do it. Denise, do you want to go with this first, that if somebody just wants to start this from scratch in their particular school district, what are your recommended first steps? And then I'll ask Laura and Alyssa the same question.
Well, you'd want to contact Wisconsin Public Education Network. You can contact one of the regional, you can go to our website, find out information, how to get a hold of us, and we'll gladly have a conversation with you and get you all the background details. In fact, we have a toolkit that we're going to make available to communities that want to take this on. And yes, the first step is the school board. Writing that resolution and asking the city to do this, or the municipality or the township, because that's where it really has to start, is they have the information and they can move forward with it. Yep. So,
and that would be at wisconsinnetwork.org, a great website to learn more about taxpayer transparency. And so, yeah, let's, Laura, from a school board standpoint, again, if somebody is looking to get this going, what are your recommendations for first steps they should take?
Well, yes, as Denise said, it starts with that resolution. And since we were able to do this in Green Bay, people have been reaching out to me across the state. In fact, after I'm done here this morning, I'll be calling someone on the eastern part of the state who is very interested in trying this in their community. This issue is heating up. And I was in Milwaukee over the weekend to see Beto O'Rourke at a city hall kind of situation, and got up to speak and tell people about this, you know, what's going on. And I got to tell you that the room, when I told them that next year there might be as much as $800 million taken out of public education for the voucher program, I mean, this is, people are paying attention to this right now. So, you know, if this is important to you, if this is something you want to try to do, start with your school board. But you're also going to need your city officials. You're going to need the support of your community to some degree, as well as potentially your superintendent, maybe some statewide elected officials. In Green Bay, it took a team of people to take it through all the stages, and you know, in the end, that's what it took.
Alyssa, in our final minute here, from a city standpoint, again, whether somebody is hearing who is serving on a city council or is close to people who are, what should they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say reach out to Wisconsin Public Education, ask those questions, and you don't have to wait, I would say, from a city perspective, right, for your school board to take something up if this is something that interests you. I think we always hear how education funding is complicated. It is, but sit down, grab a coffee with someone like Denise, get an understanding, because even though you might be from a municipal perspective, you still have that municipality. You can increase some transparency for your township, and everyone should consider doing it. We can't wait for the state to act.
No.
Time is now.
And our friend Chris Hambuck Boyle puts on Facebook, what a team for the taxpayers, what community will be next? And it's true. Oh, wait, did I want to make sure I get that right. I did say .org, right, on mine? Yes, WisconsinNetwork.org.
Yes,
okay, I saw in the comment section, somebody fixed theirs. And again, just want to make sure it was clear, WisconsinNetwork.org to learn more. Laura McCoy from the Green Bay School Board, Alyssa Prophet, a District 7 alder in the city of Green Bay, Denise Gomer-Hutchison from Wisconsin Public Education Network. You guys are taxpayer rock stars indeed. Thank you so very much. Good to see you today.
Nice to be here.
All right. And again, this is something that you can do in your community as well. And I think back to Dana Wachs's original bill. This is a basic thing. The legislature should have done it years and years ago. They didn't, but you can. A local break is next for some of you. Others will catch up with Jimmy Koska from Civic Media next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
.752, we're back now. Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, and our new D.C. correspondent, Cam Stevenson, has a D.C. newsletter called Below the Beltway. You can read it at beltway.news. or through couriernewsroom.com, and his latest column is about what's happening in Texas. Texas tries to oust elected officials through legal gerrymandering and illegal schemes. Again, Below the Beltway from Cam Stevenson of Courier Newsroom. All right, let's turn to our Way Up North segment and talk to Jim Payne again, mayor of Superior, all about what's happening in the northwestern corner of the state. And this time around, we're going to be talking about high-speed internet and the things that local governments can do rather than simply sitting around and waiting for the private sector to discover that you're there. Mayor Jim Payne, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you, Pat?
I'm great. It's so nice to see you here. I know that Superior is not the first, but definitely the latest in communities that have been looking for ways to kind of move the process along of making sure that your residents have access to broadband, which is the term for high-speed internet. So what is happening right there right now? What is it that you're kicking off?
Well, we're certainly not the first to recognize the need for high-speed, reliable, and affordable access to the internet, but we're the first city in Wisconsin, the first community of any kind, to create a publicly owned open access broadband network. There is no other network of our kind in Wisconsin. And it's a unique public-private partnership where we own the actual network, the physical network, and we sell internet access to private internet service providers who in turn sell it to customers. So they compete freely on our network the same way multiple delivery services, UPS, FedEx, US Postal Service compete on the roads that the city builds. So it combines public infrastructure with private competition.
And that, I'm glad to hear that explanation, because when I first heard about it, it made me wonder about a law that the Republican-led legislature passed several years ago that essentially was a ban on municipal networks, especially Wi-Fi networks. Again, not wanting, you know, the public sector to compete with the private sector. A lot of people were upset by that, saying, hey, look, in some of these smaller communities, the private sector isn't coming up here anytime soon. They're only going to want to serve the big cities. So why block local units of government that want to provide this kind of service? It sounds like you have found the right path through of you're not the internet provider, but you have made it easier for the private sectors to come up here and extend service that they otherwise wouldn't do on their own. Does that sound about right?
Almost. The biggest difference is people don't have to come here to provide the internet. People are already here that can provide the internet. So because all we require people to do is be an ISP, they don't have to own this gigantic physical network, a multi-million dollar investment. That allows small businesses to go into business selling the internet to customers. So one of our first ISPs, it came from Duluth, Minnesota, right next door, and is now headquartered in Superior. It's a really small business. They only serve this community on our network. So what we did is, rather than have a giant monopoly, which was what almost every city in the country has, selling us internet at whatever price they want. Our monopoly Spectrum, they actually raised the price of the internet during the pandemic. That was a kind of, we just saw that as unconscionable. How can you exploit people that way? So what we did is we combined what I thought is the best of the political philosophies on the left and the right. We believe in private sector competition to lower prices and increase innovation, but the public should own infrastructure. We shouldn't allow the private sector to control infrastructure that is vital to modern life. And so that's what we did. We just combined the two, and we're 2 weeks in and it's already a hit.
And is it a network that is accessible to everybody in the Superior area now, or is it starting in one area and building out?
No, we started in a pilot area, one neighborhood. It's actually my neighborhood. I'm talking to you on it right now. And so it was meant to show skeptics that this could actually work. One of the early successes, though, is our construction costs actually came in so far under budget that we're building out much faster than we had originally planned. So we will be lighting up the next neighborhood already this fall.
And how is it that the city was able to afford to do its part of this public-private partnership?
Joe Biden, really. ARPA dollars that came to every community in the country. What a lot of people forget is that the ARPA dollars, which have been used for so many different things across the country, were primarily meant for utility infrastructure. And the first utility described in that law is access to broadband. And so we just took them at their word, and we used it to build a network. And so the first $5 million plus of this network was covered by that bill.
So President Biden had this American recovery plan and had a mission for it. And you took that literally and seriously and made it work. It sounds like perhaps the most textbook case of ARPA funds doing what they were intended to do at the time.
Exactly. In fact, we've been trying to build this network since before the pandemic, but the pandemic proved every single argument we made correct. When we had to send people home from work, send children home from school, and they did not have access to the internet, that meant they didn't go to school, Pat. That's what it meant. And people are still trying to pretend like that didn't happen. We lost a generation of kids that should have been educated and weren't because they didn't have access to this vital public infrastructure. The Biden administration gave us money to solve that problem, make sure that never happened again. And that's what we spent it on.
That's incredible. And you said another neighborhood is coming. How long do you think it might take for most, if not all, of the city to be served?
That's a political question. you ask me, I'd like to get it done in the next 2 years. But, you know, we have to prove that it's a success. I think we're already doing that. Like I said, we need to get to a 10% take rate. 10% of the area should be customers by the end of the year. I think we're going to cross that in the next month. And if we can show real success by the fall of next year, I think we'll have justified moving quite a bit faster than our original forecast of 5 to 7 years.
Superior Mayor Jim Payne with a great update from way up north. Jim, thank you so much. Good to talk to you again, Mr. Mayor. Have a wonderful day.
Always fun. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Coming up in our next hour, we'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO about the stories that he's following there. And then later, Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman will join us, and we'll talk about the 60th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act and what the attacks on it could mean for voting in Wisconsin as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.